I want to thank Zocalo, and I've done 4 or 5 different events with Zocalo since the inception. They are LA born and bred, but have now become a global phenomenon. They help us think, they help us laugh, they help us reflect at a time when most of what passes as media is kind of defined by people yelling at each other. They claim a different space. And I want to thank Gregory Rodriguez and his entire team for believing in LA and believing in us that we can be thinking people. And we can also have fun. And thank you for allowing me to choose Airplane. My favorite movie. So oftentimes you only see the serious side of people who are in public office. My parents, Gil and Suki, who are here, raised me with a good goofy sensibility that you have to be able to laugh at yourself, laugh at the world. And this movie, and can't wait for the Zuckers and Mr. Abram to come up here afterwards, but these were 3 geniuses who reshaped what comedy meant. And for a 9-year-old, it certainly was an exciting movie on all sorts of levels. But I see this as really a metaphor for what happens when you threaten to leave LA for Chicago. Enjoy the movie.
Please give a very warm welcome to Miss Madeline Brand.
Well, thank you, Dulce, and thank you for coming out tonight. What a great night. Oh my gosh, I can't think of any better place to be on a Thursday night. I don't think you have anywhere else to be, right, Mr. Mayor?
No, not at all.
Right. Okay. Well, let me quickly introduce our panelists. Before making Airplane, it was in 1980 that this movie came out. It doesn't seem that old, really, just like all of us. I just don't seem that old. Jim, Jerry, and David made the Kentucky Fried Movie, which was based on a sketch comedy that they developed. They grew up together in Wisconsin and decided to come out here and see what would happen, and good things obviously happened. They have made many, many movies together and solo, including the Naked Gun movies, Ruthless People, Top Secret, and on and on and on. Mayor Garcetti needs really no introduction at all, but you know, you have a very impressive background. You are of Mexican and Jewish descent. You went to Columbia, Rhodes Scholar. You're an accomplished musician, among other things. But I think we all want to know, do you speak jive?
What's great about it is it doesn't seem incomprehensible anymore. It's like become the language that everybody knows. Not as well as June Cleaver does, but I speak okay. And you know, it's so funny to look back. I mean, there's so many things that you probably couldn't get away with doing now, but also are...
Yeah. Start with your favorite 7 frames.
Yeah, exactly. Right. But at the same time, it still, you know, it doesn't feel dated. It's still fresh. And everything about these guys' humor, which is what I love, is it always seems well-intentioned. There's nothing nasty about it. It always comes from a really good place, but it's sharp, too.
So you could have chosen any movie at all.
Sure.
And really.
We had a huge debate in my office. They're like, it has to be LA Confidential or Chinatown or like, you know, a serious LA movie. But this was a Los Angeles movie. And I thought about, you know, it didn't, I didn't realize how much it would influence my life that, you know, to take over as mayor and realize that LAX hadn't been improved since the movie. or the very powerful closing speech. You know, Rex is talking about municipal bonds that we just recently got a AA rating that I'm very proud of. I mean, these are things that are very important that came back to me later in life. So thank you guys for putting me on the path.
Anytime.
Well, speaking of political figures in the movie, Howard Jarvis is in the movie. At the beginning, he's in the cab, and he's very patient.
Right,
Very, very patient indeed. How did you decide to cast Howard Jarvis in 1980? This is right after Prop 13 was passed.
He was in the news a lot at that point and very well known. And I don't even, do you remember whether there were other people?
I can't remember how that originated.
There were other people we had gone to, you know, first. And I think it was one of those things where someone said, hey, how about Howard Jarvis? And we said, yeah, he's pretty silly, there, you know.
You know, he may not have been the first choice. Yeah, it's like came down to Howard Jarvis.
He did not audition for the part. Yeah. Gave it to him.
So this movie, you know, the jokes come fast and furious. And did you ever imagine that you would have these lines that would live on to this day, that people would just quote and would just become iconic and just part of the culture?
Yeah, of course. No, I don't think we thought the movie would last, really. I mean, at the time we made it, there was no, you know, DVD or internet, really, and all, you know, the or computers for that matter. And I think we were just excited that it did well when it opened, but never ever thought it would have this long a life.
In fact, VHS machines just came out around the same time as Airplane, and in 1980 we got a plaque and award for the largest selling VHS in the world, and there were 25,000 copies sold.
And Mayor, you have one, right?
Yeah,
you have one.
Yeah. Betamax, baby.
So wait,
Betamax.
You were 9 years old when you saw this?
Nine, yeah.
Nine?
Yeah, 9 years
old. Did you get all the jokes?
Yes.
I think so. yeah, I mean, some of them are pretty obvious. You know.
Should we apologize to your parents?
No. I never looked at Jell-O the same way, I'll put it that way.
By the way, your mother told me today that she didn't know that was your favorite movie.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah. We started learning things about each other, Mom. Yeah.
She didn't know he was out that night.
Exactly. Yeah. Right.
Call your mother. All right. So when you decided to cast this movie, sort of did these the unconventional casting of leading men of the time who were not known as comedians, and was that a big risk for you, or you were consciously obviously playing against type?
Well, for us, it was the only way we could do the movie. We thought comedians would have ruined it, and I think the natural inclination of the studio executives at Paramount was to cast, you know, funny comedians, and we really wanted it to appear just like one of those old movies, or like Airport, any of that, just so almost as though we had redubbed the movie and the actors didn't even know it. So, and which we used to do. We used to have fun redubbing the movies.
When Peter Graves came in to me, you know, he's the nicest guy, but he didn't really, you know, he said, "I'm not really funny." And we said, "We think you are."
When Peter first read it, he thought, his first impression was, "This is the most tasteless piece of garbage I've ever read." And it was his wife, I guess, and his kids that convinced him to do it.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Did you want to cast anyone who just looked at the script and said, "No way"?
Yeah. I think in all the parodies we worked on together, we always went to Charlton Heston.
Yeah.
And wouldn't he have been good? And he was always very polite and said no.
And we met with Jack Webb.
Right.
I think
right.
Ephraim Zimbalist. There were other people who were certainly bigger names than Leslie Nielsen.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, our casting director, you know, didn't exactly understand the whole drill. And he was getting more and more irritated because he knew he was supposed to cast a comedy. His name was going to go on it as casting director. And here we were casting, you know, Robert Stack and Peter Graves and Lloyd Bridges. And then finally, it came to Leslie Nielsen. And he said, "Leslie Nielsen? Leslie Nielsen is the guy you cast the night before." And this was like 6 weeks out from start of production. We were thrilled to get Leslie Nielsen.
But the really the great thing was the first day of dailies. The first day of shooting, we shot the scene where Leslie says, "I am serious and don't call me Shirley." And the day after that, when the studio saw the dailies, we got the call and they said, "Oh, now we get it."
Yeah. And it was because we were first-time directors and there were three of us. Paramount wrote into our contract that we could be fired after the first week. So fortunately, the "Don't Call Me Shirley" was in the first week, so they got it.
You could stick around. Yeah. How was that, three people directing a movie? How,
Well, there's not. Yeah, it actually worked out pretty well. There's really nothing that unusual about it. Pretty great. So you compromise.
I think we're part of a bit here.
I think so.
Okay, I want to get to Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. Speaking of casting, how did you get him to do the role?
In fact, that role was originally written for Pete Rose, for the baseball player. Yes. And this was before Pete Rose had emerged as the personality we're more familiar with. But it turns out that we were filming Airplane during the summer. And so he couldn't do the movie because he was playing baseball. We rewrote it for Kareem.
And then Kareem's agent called and said, we offered him $30,000. His agent called and said he needs $35,000 because he wants to buy an Oriental rug. And so at first we thought this is the best line we've ever heard from an agent. We want this guy to represent us, you know. But so, okay, we paid him his $35,000, and then 3 weeks later, there was an article in Time magazine and a picture of Kareem in front of an Oriental rug that he had just bought for $35,000. Yeah. But
this was done on a shoestring budget.
Yeah, $3 million.
$3 million, and it made at the time something like 90 million?
Domestic 80, yeah.
And that's pretty good.
Yeah. And it actually,
that's a lot of.
Yeah, no, it was great because they even though we didn't have a very good definition of profit, participation, they couldn't hide it fast enough. So because it made money pretty quickly, but it also did equally as well foreign, which at the time was very unusual, and I think just because it's a satire on. American films, which they had all, seen, it traveled better than a lot of comedies that were about, something like Animal House, which is a great comedy, didn't travel because it's about American fraternities, so there wasn't the familiarity with it.
So everyone in the world had seen those disaster movies?
Yes.
To death. Yeah, the airport series.
Yeah.
It's also a style of acting, really. Even if you've never seen a disaster movie, just that hard-hitting toughness. And actually, you made an interesting point, Mayor, when you talked about it not being mean-spirited. And one thing we realized that when we're satirizing, picking something to satirize, it not only do we need to find something that obviously we think is kind of laughable, but also something that we have affection for. And we love those kinds of movies, and even the movie whose plot we borrowed heavily from, a movie called Zero Hour, we loved that. I mean, it was sort of, and that whole style of acting was kind of, we'd make fun of it, but I think you're absolutely right that was one of the things that I think is really important about our style of humor is that it isn't mean-spirited. We're making fun, we're satirizing, we're making fun, but with heart. So
in fact, I just add to that. I think when you see Leslie and Peter and those guys playing those roles, really what we're understanding is they're having a laugh at their own expense. And that's, you define the self-effacing sense of humor, and that's part of the subtext, I think, of that.
Now, you mentioned Zero Hour, and there's an unusual way that you came across Zero Hour.
Yes, we used to run a small theater on Pico Boulevard in West L.A. called Kentucky Fried Theater.
Wow. There's two people who went there.
There's some people. We did that from 1972 to 1976, we had a show called My Nose, just so the L.A. Times listing would say My Nose runs continuously. So, and that's the kind of things we had no budget for advertising. So, but we used to have live sketches on stage. Plus, a portion of the show was on video, and we had video monitors on stage. and we do spoofs of commercials. And how we would get the commercials is to leave the tape recorder running all night, and we, in the morning, we clear it off. So we cleared it off one morning, and it was always for the late night movies and the commercials that were in between. And so we started getting into this movie more than the commercials, and we were laughing harder at the movie, which was Zero Hour with Dana Andrews, Linda Darnell, and Sterling Hayden, and Crazy Legs Hirsch was the athlete who played the one of the co-pilots. So and so we thought, why don't we do this? And I mean, the first version of the movie was actually not called Airplane; it was called The Late Show. And we had, it was, you know, portions of, you know, the Airplane story, but with actual commercial spoofs in interspersed. But the first couple of people we had read it said, well, this Airplane movie is funnier than the commercials. So we eliminated the commercials and then became Airplane.
Is there such a thing as too many jokes?
Not if they if they're getting laughed.
There's such a thing as too many bad jokes. But
yeah.
Did you cut any? Did you prune them at all?
Oh, yeah.
I think when we used to perform in Kentucky Fried Theater, we'd actually get up on stage and laugh. And none of us clearly is very comfortable on stage. And so we would, when we would perform, if a joke didn't work, we couldn't wait to cut it. You know, we felt so uncomfortable. And that sort of led to this rapid fire cutting style.
And Mayor, looking at the movie now, mm-hmm. just now, and looking at L.A. portrayed, mm-hmm. L.A. of your youth, I mean, what crosses your mind? What do you think of how the city has changed?
I mean, it was a wild time, clearly, in the 70s. You know, all joking aside, you do see, you know, things that hadn't changed. The airport, finally, we've opened a new terminal. We're going to do 8 of the 9 terminals, bring things in. But it was a... It reminds me just of a kind of a free-spirited time. You know, I was young, so it's easy to say it was an innocent time, but now, you know, the time between that, from 80 to, say, maybe where we are now, we went through some really deep things as a city. We went from being that kind of light, anybody welcome, sure, we had our problems place, to, like, the riots, the earthquakes, you know, some really deep things. And so it just reminds me of my youth, where we were kind of the center of the universe, but we also were pretty humble and anonymous. We weren't yet the major big leagues like we are as a city, but we had the most creative people on the face of the earth coming here, growing up here. And, you know, what I love about the movie is I think it changed humor, at least in film. I mean, you can watch whatever is Brooklyn Nine-Nine right now. The type of humor that you'll see when people do that kind of deadpan boom, 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 really wasn't there before this movie. So the reason I chose this was, it's not only one of the funniest movies made, I think it changed humor. It changed humor in the movie. So to be there at the birth, that reminds me of my city back then. We were doing that all the time.
But by the way, Sokol is also doing my favorite, they've asked us to come again and do a My Favorite Mayor series.
Thank you. Thank you. I hope I can squeeze in.
After a lot of discussion, we chose you.
We've got some good videos from 6 and 7. Swimming naked in the pool. It's kind of funky stuff.
We thought it would be a great opportunity to support your environmental initiative about closing the 405 every September.
Yeah, absolutely. For the month. Absolutely. Yeah. Appreciate that.
I'm tearing down these old broken down theaters.
Oh, God, let's get rid of these places. You can barely hear in them.
Is this theater up to earthquake code?
Enjoy it while you're here. Yeah. So,
I think you could cast him in one of your movies.
I have a SAG card, it's true.
Definitely.
And I'm probably the only SAG actor in town because of city ethics laws. I can't get paid. So I have done a couple things on TV or movie, and I have to give the money back. So the price is, I don't need a rug. I don't need nothing. You just do it.
So just speaking of this nascent, this changing of comedy and this, you know, the birth of it in L.A. in this form, I read this, I don't know if it's true, that Lorne Michaels actually came to your theater and when he saw your act, thought, that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to do that on TV.
Wow. Right, in 1974. And we only know this because we read it in his in the book about Saturday Night Live. But we remember when Lorne Michaels came to see the show, and we knew that he was some big shot from New York, and he brought Dick Ebersol. And in the book, it says that he was showing Kentucky Fried Theater to Dick Ebersol to say, this is what I want to do on national TV.
Only not with them.
Not with these guys. So for another 3 years, we were dancing around on the stage for 10 cents. But we're
well,
not bitter.
So did everything change after Airplane for you three?
Oh, yeah. Well, we no longer save string.
And I'm now willing to, buy blueberries out of season. Despite the, extra cost.
I sort of remember why we were making it, thinking, someday I'm going to have kids, and I'm going to have to explain this to them.
Well, speaking of, are there any parts of the movie that you kind of cringe at and you wouldn't do if you could do it again?
We were just talking about that.
Yeah, we want to recut the whole thing.
Can I ask you guys, what's the spear and then the watermelon? Yeah. Apple, which just kind of starts getting random. What's it?
Well, we could start with that.
That and when Lloyd Bridges takes a puff of his cigarette and throws it out the window, and they both go like this, and there's an explosion. We howled, when we wrote it, when in dailies, when we shot it, but it's dead silence in front of an audience. Yeah.
and the spear and the watermelon were just kind of weird. We just were doing weird.
And then the turban guy, when he does blow up, that's the only, to me, unrealistic part of the film, because it would have blown a hole in the airplane. But otherwise, it's a perfectly plausible.
You're right, we just didn't think of that at the time. But that was actually added. That bit, it was not written that way, but it felt like it needed a punch, so that was an effect that was just popped in there as an afterthought.
David's son is here tonight, too, and we were talking in the lobby right after the movie and about things we'd love to cut, and David's son said, why do you have it in there where the guy looks in the microwave and says they were in radar range?
Oh, yeah.
What does that mean? Yeah. What is that mean?
Yeah, radar range.
What's a radar?
And the second cup of coffee was about, a very famous commercial, TV commercial.
And the other thing that younger people might ask is, what's a phone booth?
Yeah.
Was the car phone supposed to be a joke, or was that an early car phone?
That was, I think in those days, actually, you could have, Howard W. Koch had one, a phone radio, in your car, but it did look like a sort of a normal receiver, and you didn't dial people directly. You called, it wasn't a cell system. You would call some company that would then connect you.
Gotcha.
That's our favorite story
to
tell.
That's a good one. I got more questions like that. That helps.
It's like, what was that's the name? Fine.
That's fine.
Give me a minute. I'll think of the name of the company.
So trivia thing. I learned this when I was doing research on the film yesterday. It's Lorna Patterson?
Lorna Patterson.
Yeah. She's a cantor now.
Yeah.
She's a cantor. Is Lorna here? Can we hear Dianu or something?
Yeah,
she's the other stewardess.
I love that.
Because
she's who's here? Ross Harris is here.
Is here?
Oh, well, Rossi. Wow. Rossi Harris is the boy that gets the plane. The way.
Where's
that?
Come on.
And we haven't seen him since.
Where are you?
Oh,
I didn't know.
That's right.
Yeah.
I have not seen him. This is amazing.
I told you to look before I said hello, but I didn't know.
Oh, hi.
Hi.
How are you doing? Great to meet you.
Hi.
You live in L.A.?
Welcome.
He lives in Camarillo. Okay, you're dead to me. Don't worry about it. Just kidding. Great performance.
Do you have any recollections from the movie? You were pretty young, but...
Yeah, I have a lot of recollections.
Oh, he can. You can talk into
okay.
this.
I mean, I was 10 years old, so
I don't remember a lot from when I was 10 years old, but I remember almost everything from that because it was a very impactful experience. Yeah. Definitely. Yeah.
Did you still have the airplane?
No, they didn't let me keep the airplane.
Oh. What kind of people are you?
It was studio regulation.
It only grossed $160 million, don't worry.
I think Michael Eisner has it.
Is there anything specific that you remember?
I have a pretty risque story from it, yeah.
Now's the time. Now is your time to tell it.
I hope it doesn't involve any of us.
Well, there was a cut scene, remember, where the guy was in, there's turbulence and he was urinating in the bathroom. You remember that?
No.
You guys remember shooting that?
Yeah.
I don't remember that.
Maybe this was a hallucination.
This was. Were you in airplane too?
So you are scarred from that.
Yeah, a little bit. But I just want to thank you guys because it's been a great experience for me from just all over the world. People have, you know, as soon as they find out. I mean, I've been in cars with people and someone will tell someone and the person will almost crash the car because
that's the kid.
So it's meant a lot to me. All right. It's a genius
nice
film.
Wow, that's great. Crazy, unexpected things happen when we hang out with you guys.
Yeah. Awesome.
I think it's time for...
Before we go, we do have something for the mayor.
Oh, wow.
We brought him a poster.
A poster.
That's awesome.
But it is inscribed.
Oh.
It's inscribed.
Oh,
so
that is
you
so
can't,
great.
You can't read, but the... We inscribed it so you can't read it, but maybe you'd like to read it.
It says, to Eric Garcetti, or current mayor of Los Angeles. So we'll keep this at City Hall. We're thrilled that Airplane is your favorite film. On the other hand, we're terrified that someone with that mindset is running the city. All the best.
Okay.
That was awesome. Thank you.
Thank you.
That was awesome. I think instead of a portrait at the top of City Hall, I'll put this up when I leave.
We did leave some time to take questions from all of you.
So you guys have satirized a lot of different genres over your career. I'm just curious, what genres would you be interested in satirizing that you have not satirized before? This is for the mayor.
I've been working on a script about it's a satire on the international spy thriller genre, which includes Bourne Identity, Bond, and Mission Impossible. It's called Counterintelligence, spelled with one L. So that's what I've been working on.
You know how the LA City runs the Greek and the Bowl, and the John Anson Ford. Do you think you could run one of these theaters and keep these kind of things alive?
Yeah. Well, we're so excited about what's happening on Broadway. The county runs two of those, and the city runs one of them. And we've got a whole network, actually, of great theaters, not beautiful like this, but really important ones throughout the city. Even places like up at Barnsdall Art Park, which if you haven't gone, 2 weeks ago we reopened Hollyhock House, which is gorgeous, Frank Lloyd Wright home. There's a theater there, a municipal art gallery. We do a bunch of that, but what I love about what's happening on Broadway is that folks who have owned these buildings for a long time, you know, they've brought back the Orpheum, they've brought back the Million Dollar Theater, and I don't know how many of you guys went out a couple weeks ago when we had kind of the celebration on Broadway of what it once was and has become, but we've got a real vision to continue that here, to make this a main street again for downtown. And I think one thing that'll help that is when the Expo line opens up in about a year or year and a half, you'll be able to go from Broadway in Santa Monica to Broadway downtown, and we'll kind of reconnect the city to itself without being stuck in 2 hours of traffic just to get here. So I think Adele is happily the owner of this. I'm not going to make her an offer tonight, but if she keeps up this kind of programming, I'm quite satisfied. The owners on Broadway are doing great.
Hi, Mr. Mayor. This is Mike Gerzovitz. I have a question for you. Since this is your favorite movie and concerning LAX, I'm wondering if you're considering upgrading the white zone courtesy parking only to live voices, and are you holding auditions?
It's good for us to consider. I know what this is about. You want me to have an abortion. But sure, we'll consider that. And one of the, all joking aside, one of the things I do want to do is at LAX, when people arrive, they should know they are in, you know, if you've been to the Austin airport, you know how they have like bands playing in the Austin airport? Why do we arrive in an airport that says nothing about LA? We should have movies playing. We should have, you know, LA brands like Coffee Bean, Tea Leaf, and California Wines handed to you. We should have bands. We should have food trucks parked up. We should have the content.
A few less empty rental car buses, too, would help.
Yes, and when we bring rail in, which we've now approved as of last year, we still have to engineer it and get the details done, but it will happen. We'll finally get a rail link into the airport. You'll be able to take a lot of those shuttle buses out and I think have a great passenger experience. And, you know, if you want to come in and use the PA for a while, we'll entertain it.
No parking.
By the way, I should just mention that the people, the voices in the movie, in Airplane, are the same people that did the voices
at LAX.
At LAX. Yeah,
that's awesome.
It was a husband and wife team that sold the airport the equipment.
Wow.
And they just...
That's awesome.
We read all these actors, and nobody could get it. It just didn't seem right to us. It just wasn't funny. And so we tracked it down. Who are these people? Who are the actors that did that? Yeah. And it turned out it was just this couple, this man and wife, who sold the equipment. And they just... recorded it, and they were terrific.
And amazingly, they have 9 kids.
Good evening. I'm Eitan Ginsberg. Really a twofer for you. When you were developing this movie, how much of it or what parts of it came into being were written on the fly as you were producing the film? And I guess the second question is, how did you get so many great cameos? Were you looking for people or you just took whoever came?
Very little of it was thought up on the fly. I mean, we could actually tell you what, you know, the few things that most of it was written over a period of a few years. And, you know, we'd fight over every word and it was exact. And there were some things that we added, like all the people coming to slap the woman. I mean, the first 3 people were scripted, but then the people with the guns and the whips and all that stuff was added, and, you know, the prop lady went out and found all that stuff. I can't think of anything else that was ad-libbed. We don't do much ad-libbing. We just
wasn't the character
Stucker?
Yeah, Stucker. Didn't he ad-lib a bunch of stuff?
No, but Stucker was our piano player in Kentucky Fried Theater, and amazingly talented. And I mean, we all say, you know, when we were up on stage with him, we were invisible.
Yep.
But we couldn't even write for him because he was just such this comedic force of nature. So what we would do is we actually phoned him one afternoon, and we gave him the straight lines. We gave them the reporter's questions, and then he gave us the answers. So those were all of his lines he wrote.
That's great.
And when he plugs in the lights and he takes over. That was inspired by a piece of stock footage that we bought of the point of view of the pilot, and the runway lights go out, and so we wrote that bit for him to go with that footage.
And didn't you had the guys who did the jive, wrote for them, but then they created own lines.
We always said, you know, we wrote, you know, to the best of our ability as, you know, you know, 3 white Jewish guys from Wisconsin, and all we knew was, I think, mofo.
The original script just said mofo, mo-wo.
But these guys, Al White and
Norm Gibbs,
came in to audition. They were friends from high school, and they used to do this stuff, you know, this repartee in you know, in and out of class. And so they just did it. And we just were on the floor and we said, just do it. Do it in the movie. And so that's what you see.
And June Cleaver knew it just automatically.
Oh, yeah. She grew up that way.
Yes.
Al
and Norm actually wrote her stuff, too, and taught her how to do it.
they went over her stuff, yeah.
Hi, my name is Dalia Jaramillo. I'm from East L.A. And my question is about Kareem. That is my absolute favorite part of the movie. And how did he react when Russi said what his dad had shared with him? How'd you choose another L.A. icon, Bill Walton, and Pete Rose would have never worked in that part.
We often say you're absolutely right that Pete Rose wouldn't have been nearly as much fun. And when we reflect on what happened back then and how well the movie did, we often feel like the seas divided for us. Everything kind of fell into place. We got all these wonderful actors, all the studios in the right frame of mind and everything. And even to the point, it was released the summer of 1980. And we were afraid, oh gosh, we're going right up against the Summer Olympics. But what do you know, Jimmy Carter canceled the Olympics.
That, folks, concludes our show for tonight. On behalf of Socolow Public Square, I want to thank KCRW for joining us for this My Favorite Movie series, the Million Dollar Theater for hosting us, and of course, our fabulous mayor for bringing Airplane to us. Have a good night.